Hello.
Hello. Well, here we are again.
Let's try not to fuck this one up.
We apologize for the bad audio two shows in a row.
And the bad content.
Well, I felt the 287 post show. I listened to it last night. It was awful. Just awful. I just want to apologize to everyone for that. Hopefully, this next one will go better. So...
Were we really that drunk, huh?
We were pretty sloshed. I don't remember it. I don't remember having like any of the conversations we had. Do you?
I remember... You said we were singing in that one?
Yes.
I'm not sure I remember singing in that one because we were singing with Greg. I can't remember. I'm surprised we would sing two episodes in a row, which is especially ineffective since...
Since we had to record it off of the...
A backup,
the
yeah.
Backup, because... So what was the problem that you're...
So last week, the laptop was sitting over there with the USB soundboard plugged into it, but it decided to use its internal microphone to record. Mm. So it was just recording all the noise over here off to my left. I sounded okay. You sounded way over there. So I'm like, I can't use this. Well, better results by using the backup recorder again.
But the backup recorder clips. So that's why the sound is still kind of iffy. But now we should have that, hopefully, a better situation where we're pulling it off of the headphone jack, which we don't hear any clipping, so you guys shouldn't hear any clipping either if we have to pull it off the backup.
Yeah, but... better than wasting 4 hours of our life. But people might decide that, you know, we wasted 4 hours of our lives and they wasted an hour and a half of their lives or 2 hours of their lives, so...
So if you thought 287 was an awful post show or didn't listen, I don't blame you. It was. It was terrible. It was just awful. I think there were three or four good minutes in it, which is a lot less than usual. I mean, normally we get at least 10. Okay, so the big news for us is that we talked about a little bit last week, sending out all these emails. It worked.
Yeah, we're going to be flush with media samples, that's for sure.
I mean, so far we've got, what, 8 or 9 people have said yes, and we already have 6 or 7 of those have come in. We've sent out a whole bunch more this Thursday, basically covering the top 250 brewers in Rate Beer and Beer Advocate. There was something that happened where you were a little miffed at me for something I did. Reasonably so, I think. Because I made an assumption that was a little, you know, probably not the right assumption to make. And that was on Sunday, do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, for most of the breweries and the ones where I only have casual contact, what you did was fine. But, you know, there's brewers that I know, Church Brew Works, All Saints. And then there's the breweries that send us beers several times a year, like Carl Strauss. And you sent out a request to Carl Strauss, and you...
I didn't know that Carl Strauss... I'd forgotten.
I actually emailed Melody and said, you know, forgive Greg. Sorry, I threw you under the bus there, but how else was I going to explain it?
And I told you to do that. Throw me under the bus if necessary. But what I did is so most of the time I sent an email that just came from Craft Beer Radio. And sometimes if you looked in it, you would see it came from me. But sometimes on the website, they don't have an email and they have a form for you on the website. And on those websites, I filled in Jeff's name. And the reason I did that was because the phone number that we have on there goes to Jeff's phone. So I thought if he answers, someone picks up and says, you know, is Greg there? Then it would be a little weird.
Right.
But... I didn't think about the people that Jeff has contact with. So when we did the next batch, I either put my name or I put Craft Beer Radio as the name.
Right. Sounds good. It's just, I mean, I didn't get any fallout or anything from it, but it was just like, oh, damn it. You know, I didn't, because you took it under yourself to email a whole bunch of people. And I thought we were going to, oops,
that far. My coaster fell. These are newly washed glasses, so they...
I would have liked to have gone over the list together, talked about a strategy before you went out and did everything.
But. Yeah, so that was sort of my, again, my fault for not really consulting Jeff on the matter and just being like, all right, this is, I'm going to do it. and just sort of sat down and did it. And that sometimes gets you into trouble. So, but, you know, I think once the beer started flowing in, it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have lots of beers where we'll be mentioning who supplied them.
Yes.
So, it'll be nice.
I mean, our intentions are fully clear. Even I spelled it out specifically on... We did agree on the text I was sending out.
Mm-hmm.
And I spelled out specifically that, you know, we can't guarantee a good review. We can just guarantee a fair one. And we intend to stick to that.
Right. It's funny. I won't really name specifics here, but, like... The one brewery that's going to be sending us stuff, I think they think, at least some of the people in that conversation thinks that we're a real radio show. So that'll be interesting.
It says specifically we're a podcast.
I know. But this is the one brewery that there was a person who went to their regional sales rep, mm-hmm. then who went to the wholesaler, one.
Yeah.
So I think it got a little confused on exactly what we are, but hey.
I still think we're valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting the kinds of feedback we're getting. We're getting from some large and medium successful breweries. We're getting flat out no's that they don't send media samples or they won't send them to us. And then, you know, there's these other medium sized ones that are happy to. And then there's these tiny little ones that. One tiny little one said, you know, we're not in the Pennsylvania market, so we're not going to do it. It was very humble. I said, thank you.
Right.
But, we're not in Pennsylvania. Our market is the English-speaking world. Right. But there's other ones, like, you know, the one in Texas, the one in Wisconsin. They're like, hell yeah, here you go.
Yeah.
The one in Wisconsin's not New Glarus, unfortunately, but...
not yet, fingers crossed.
Not yet.
I don't think I could find... New Glarus is one of the ones I don't think I could find a contact.
Okay.
There were a couple that I couldn't find a contact for, like Brooklyn. Jeff actually had a contact, so I was able to send it to them, but they don't have a way to easily contact them on their website. So, but most of them was just pretty straightforward emails. And it just took... I mean, it took like... I did about 200 or so. It takes about 4 hours because I didn't set up one of those mail lists,
right.
Which would have been the cleaner way to do it. But all the setup would have taken so much time anyway. I would have had to extract the emails.
Yeah, you would have taken 2 hours to collect the emails and then 2 hours to set up the mail merge script in Google. So
right, and then as I was doing it, I realizing that I'm getting a little eating my headphones. Like, well, it's just my headphones.
Yeah, it sounds clean on my side.
As I was going through and getting those emails, come with the realization that a lot of these places don't have emails, and I'm going to have to use the web forms anyway.
Right.
It just turned into a process of all right. Well, I have my cut and paste, so I'll just paste them in.
I wonder if you could have used a LastPass form fill. You probably could have. Probably could have saved you a lot of time.
Hmm.
As long as most of the form fields were named. Yeah, you probably could have.
Some of them, it wasn't even just Firefox form fill work. Mm-hmm. You know, like email, if it was, because a lot of them just the name of the form is email.
Right.
And so as I start typing it, I can just push down. There it is.
I see.
So for a lot of them, it was the case. It was pretty simple. It wasn't always the case, because if the form is named something different.
I love the LastPass form fill.
Yeah.
You know, because I have all my information in there, and you just kind of say, fill this form with this profile, and birthday and everything's all filled in. So, and it's pretty good at figuring out the birthday type pull downs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I was going to say, I hope you're feeling better. But it sounds like you're not.
I'm feeling fine. It's just my cough is not such a nagging cough, but there's a soreness in my throat that.
What's that? Lego Movie and Silicon Valley.
Okay, cool. I don't know. If it sticks around another couple of days, it's something you might have to. I'm gonna have to see a doctor about because you know it's been 3 weeks. I shouldn't have a sore throat still from that, and sometimes the. Every once in a while, I don't know what it is, but the the sore turns into a bit of, I mean, it's not a ongoing pain, but there's just a little punch of pain in my throat. I'm like, that's not good. So get that taken care of.
You sound a little bit better.
Still got a sexy voice.
Yeah, you still have the deep voice, so...
Maybe I'll just learn to live with the sore throat so I can not sound like Kermit the Frog.
Is Heather enjoying it?
I don't think so. Mm. I've been eating cough drops like they're candy, though. I'm going to have rotten teeth.
Yeah. So, I just saw the Lego movie. It wasn't that great a copy.
Okay.
But it was better than, you know, a cam or something like that.
Mm-hmm. You were saying you really liked it?
Yeah, I really like the first 10 minutes I was like, maybe this would be better if I had, you know, real super HD copy, because mm-hmm. you know, I heard lots of great things about it, but I wasn't feeling it so much.
Right.
Then I let it play, and then it really surprised me. And I think, and I don't want to give away anything, but it surprised me how clever it was and how it sort of leveraged itself. It became a lot more than just a dumb tie-in movie for it. It was just a really good script, and I'll let you watch it. While you're watching it, I want you to think about story structure.
Okay.
You'll think, you know, think about all those things. You'll notice these things. But also, you'll be, I believe, impressed at the end by what they actually did with it.
Okay, cool. I'll check it out.
We can talk about it on the way down to Saber, which is next week.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
We're set for Saber.
Right.
The only bad news I have for you is your Sunday morning call time is going to be on the early side to head back.
What time
would you have? I don't know. For Heather, the earlier the better.
I was hoping, and my parents were hoping, that we could stop by early in the morning. I mean, you know, if we leave, like...
We'll have to work backwards and figure out. It'll have to be much earlier than the last time we did that.
Well, the thing is that they would have to leave. They have to leave their place at noon anyway. So we can't stay long there anyway. So if we get there like 10 o'clock.
I was thinking earlier than that.
Okay, like you were thinking like 6?
No, I was thinking, I don't know, I'd have to work it backwards, but maybe get there around 8.
Yeah, I can talk to them about it. I mean, they have a little breakfast with them. If we stay just for, would an hour be?
I think something like that could probably be doable, sure.
Okay.
But like 10 to 12, I don't...
Yeah,
I
mean, no,
I think
no.
we should... Wife's letting me go,
right?
And she was, you know, I don't know. Kids were a handful this weekend, and they'll be a handful again next weekend. Yeah. And I don't want to make her mad.
Don't agitate things. Sure, right? No, I totally understand. I mean, we will, if we have to skip my parents, then we'll skip my parents. That's
okay. Like I said, I'll put the trip in Google Maps and kind of work backwards and see what time that means we hit Pittsburgh, and we'll find out whether that's acceptable or not. So
we can take my thing for the tolls.
Okay. It doesn't matter. Tolls aren't that expensive to get down there.
Okay. So there was something that we talked about in 280 from post show that I wanted to expand on, because I, in my drunken state, I'd never actually said what I, the weirdest thing about it. That was, we talked a little bit about, before that, Max and Allison were playing Super Mario Brothers, and they were doing their little jabbing at each other.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And we were sort of discussing how kids just do that to each other and just sort of expect that. There was a conversation about how I was unclear of what to do in that situation. I didn't know whether to sort of to do what you had done or let it go. And I didn't fully explain my position or as well as I should have, because really what was going on in my mind, I think, is Jeff, I just saw Jeff, you know, tell his kids not to do that. Am I overstepping my bounds by seeing what Jeff did and seeing them messing around and telling them not to do that, or should I just let it go? Or if I let it go, is it me not reinforcing Jeff, and will he be angry about that? So
I wouldn't be angry.
Right.
I can't speak for every parent. You know, like, good corollary to that is I'm an assistant coach on Ellie's soccer team. Right. And, very friendly to the kids, but I don't know, I'm probably a lot more strict than, than the head coach is, you know, always the kids that aren't paying attention. Friendly. Owen, watch the ball. Owen, watch the ball. Owen, come over here. You know, that kind of thing. Where the main coach is, no, not correcting. And there's times one of his, so hope I haven't had this conversation with the coach. I don't really know the guy that well yet, right? But I wouldn't want to be the coach for Max when he was 5 years old or six mm-hmm. years old. He's not going to listen to me, right? So I do the same thing for his son, right? Hopefully there's an unspoken bond there that that's effective because he's not going to listen to me. So please do that. But I don't know. Like, yeah. Am I overstepping my bounds there? That's right. The question. Like I said, you know, we're guys, we don't sit down and talk about this shit, you know, at least not to the guy you barely know. You know, we're very different on this show here. But it's like, hopefully he appreciates it because Mike is not going to listen to him. Right. Mm-hmm. So he'll listen to Coach Jeff, you know, that kind of thing. So,
but that's a situation I find myself in sometimes, even with like my sister's kids. And I want to point out that Jeff is eating the anti hangover stuff. This time you're not mixing it with water.
It's the first time I'm eating the powder.
Yeah, I think the powder is just fine.
It is. It's tasty. Once you get it mixed into a water, it's a pretty good drink too. But it's so hard to get it mixed in.
Yeah, it doesn't mix well. Sort of like, it's like cinnamon. It takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Likes to clump.
I don't know if this stuff works yet or not. The guy actually emailed me. He's like, what do you think? So, I think we'll talk about it on the show.
All right, so I should
We'll be normally skeptical about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just try to give it a normal review on the show. All right. I mean, you've had it twice now, right?
Yeah, but I don't think I had it in the evening. But I don't normally by the time I get home, mm-hmm. I've had so much water, I'm normally fine anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I you know, so Jeff goes right to sleep. I tend to stay up another 2-3 hours not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you're probably having a lot of water for that time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it really, I don't wake up with hangovers, period.
I do.
Okay.
I mean, it's a pleasant tasting powder, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's honey and it's, you know, mostly you taste the honey. And so it's not like you're eating something foul and disgusting. The question is, how effective is it? And how much does it cost? I'll have to look up online. This is Swiss Alpine Organics.com. And this is the Clark Off trademark.
Prevents hangovers, it says. And that's trademark. No, that's a star. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA.
Yep.
Okay. So let's get back to the question at hand. So it's like I was saying, this happens with even my sister's kids and, you know, other kids I'm encountering. The question is, and I guess it's one I should ask in every situation because it changes parent to parent. So I guess I'll ask it of you. What's the limit of my authority around your kids? What should I do? What shouldn't I do?
You probably don't have permission to spank them.
I never would, yeah.
But I think anything short of that would probably be acceptable. I couldn't imagine. I mean, maybe if you start berating them, that would be unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine that would be something you'd consider doing either, right? No. So I think anything that you would consider rational is okay by me. And now unfortunately, that's a vague thing, but we don't have this huge checklist to go through, mm-hmm. right?
So, I'll ask the specific one. Was I doing the right thing by telling your kids to stop, or would it have mattered either way?
I don't think you were reinforcing, like you were worrying. I mean, the key, what seems to be most effective right now, however it wasn't effective today, is telling them to keep their hands to themselves.
Yeah, we covered that.
That's been effective, but it wasn't today. So,
all right, well, no need to dwell on that one. I sent you a list of Super Nintendo games, the top 25.
I haven't had time to look at it yet. You told me a couple, yeah. But I haven't had time to follow the link yet.
The one that I skipped my mind, but I thought obvious, Mario Kart.
Actually, I played that. So today we had our community yard sale, and I had that old TV for my mom, which I had fixed the screen up on, so I sold that. And I had my father-in-law's old modded Xbox with the main with all the emulators on it. So I had it set up in the garage. Got a lot of attention playing, Mario Brothers one. But I played Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. Oh my god, it's so bad. So the processing is not there, right? So the walls are just markers, like paint on the ground, right? So the walls don't have any height to them. The bonus squares are just question mark blocks on the ground. Everything's flat.
Right.
And you get stuck in a corner and you can't back up. And it's really, because you have to turn, go forward. You have to turn really slowly to get stuck out of the corner. It was not a very playable game at all.
So it was the emulator that was having problems, not the game itself.
No, I just don't think the SNES made a very playable Mario Kart compared to Mario Kart 64 and Mario Kart for the Wii.
Think
of it. It's a first person type, well, third person, but there's a lot of refresh happening. It's split screen. There's a lot of processing that the thing has to do. And I'm just not sure that SNES was up to that.
It's doing that mode 7 stuff.
Mm-hmm. One game I fired up this morning that I had forgotten about that was on there, but it's under the NES emulators. 1942, 1944. Mm-hmm. Those games are so much fun because you just fly and you're just destroying and destroying and destroying. And I don't know, that's always a fun game.
Yeah, well, you can think back to those, Spy Hunter.
I tried playing Spy Hunter on the NES, and I had problems with that. It didn't seem very playable. I mean, it was okay.
Try the MAME version.
Yeah, the MAME version's probably better.
Yeah. Anytime you can play the actual arcade game, it's...
Did you hear about the documentary the guys were...
Yes,
the E.T. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for people that might not know, the Atari 2600 version of E.T. was rushed out right when E.T. was a huge box office hit. And any, video game archivist, history type guy, will put this as the worst video game ever.
I take a little issue with that because, it's not... Well, I don't think it was the worst game ever. I mean, I understand why people say that. Mm-hmm. It was definitely a disappointing, and when it comes down to it, a pretty shitty game. It was way... I mean, the concept was way beyond what a 2600 could do. But it was a game that was built in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were on a kind of pressure, and one guy just had to build it in 6 weeks. And I think he did a pretty amazing job of making something in 6 weeks that, it was a shitty game. But, you look at Pac-Man for the Atari, another notoriously horrible game, that was 4 months. And so it's like, I just feel like that game wasn't as bad as some games that are even made today that are just pieces of shit, regardless of how long people worked on it or stuff like that.
I see.
If you look at all the context, I think.
Well, and there was also, I was kind of parroting what I heard in the story, right?
Yeah.
But there was some notoriously bad. Didn't that crash the video game market? All the third party Atari games.
It's thought to be a major. The E.T. was thought to be. I don't know if you could say it crashed the market,
but wasn't there also a bunch of unlicensed games or something?
Yeah, what happened was like Activision sued Atari to be able to release their games for the 2600 without having to have Atari licensing. And they won. And so they started to put out pretty good games, Activision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They started to put out, you know, one of their big ones was
Pitfall.
Pitfall. Amazing. Still fun to play. I mean, it's not deep.
No, it's not. It's
but it's an iPhone game.
Oh, is it?
Essentially.
Right? Oh, yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
It's the same concept as the games that are popular now on the iPhone. It's Temple Run, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So the thing about that is that once they won, other people were free to jump into the game. And then they made their own cartridges. And so the market was getting flooded with shit games. Mm-hmm. And people didn't have a way to distinguish. That's why, remember, when the NES came out, they put the Nintendo seal of approval on all the games, mm-hmm. even though there were plenty of shitty games.
Right.
But at least...
they just had to buy the seal of approval.
Right. So... That was a contributing factor in the market. Another contributing factor is the same reason why beer didn't work in the 80s, right? I mean, it was a fad. The technology wasn't there to keep up and to keep making new and more interesting stuff. Everything was a clone of Space Invaders or Asteroids or a driving game.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure of the beer analogy. I mean, I know what you're trying to say, but... I don't know if the analogy tying it to beer is a good one, especially with the present audience.
Yeah, I'm trying it. I'm tying it to something where there was a lot of potential,
right?
But the actual apparatus wasn't there to make it as powerful as it could have been.
Power glove.
Once technology came around and once things got better. And you could have more different type of games. It slowly but surely caught on, and now it's huge. Now it makes more money than movies,
right?
So yeah, but the ET thing is funny because what happened was the story is that Atari had so many of these, they made millions of them, and it got terrible reviews. And while they sold hundreds of thousands, they had millions of inventory that wouldn't sell. And they just took a loss and dumped them all into a landfill in New Mexico. Uh-huh. And then apparently people started stealing the games, and so they covered it with concrete. And this had been a legend that had been passed down and down. Mm-hmm. And some people believed it, some people didn't believe it. So this documentarian, the same guy who he wrote some shitty movie. I forget which one. It was the shitty movie. He wanted to find this, and he managed to convince the New Mexico government that he could find the specific spot in the landfill where it likely took place, and to bring in people to dig down like 26 feet or however long it was to get to where he thought those games would be. And they didn't know whether they'd come up with anything or not. Mm-hmm. And they dug down, they found the concrete cap, broke it, and guess what there was? Games.
A million.
I don't know if they found a million of them, but they definitely found some.
Awesome.
So
there's mining landfill is gonna be a bigger thing, I mean, in the coming decades.
You would think. I mean, if we don't come up with better ways to get resources, it's gonna be cheaper.
It's gonna be a cheaper place for a lot of the resources that have been thrown out for the last 70 years. So
it's really interesting to compare that to what people are doing with finding Roman lead. Remember we talked about that a while ago?
I'm not sure I remember that.
Physicists like to get Roman lead, I think because it's been out of the ground for so long that it doesn't have a lot of impurities and or stuff that would be in the ground, uranium and whatever.
Okay.
That would make it so it makes their lead better for being shielding for reactors and for testing and stuff like that. So,
oh, okay.
So the price of Roman lead,
because it's gone through several half-lives, so all the uranium stuff's
Uranium is a long half-life,
but it has less.
Yeah,
active ingredients in it than
stuff you dig up.
It's interesting.
Stuff you dig up and separate from stuff. So but there is actually ships that go and try to find shipwrecks that were carrying lead, and take that lead and give those to physicists all over the world. So there's actually a market for that.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I never would have thought that, you know, there'd be an advantage to getting Roman lead, but makes sense. You know, the volume's been isolated, so it's had time for half-life decay, and I guess just alpha decay, right? And
well, I don't know. I mean, alpha uranium would be I know plutonium's an alpha decay, but plutonium is man-made, so that's not right.
No, whatever. Alpha, beta. Gone through several half-lives. Yeah. It said, and because what a half-life is the amount of time for half of the radioactive material to decay.
Decay.
And Rome has been
2,000 years ago, roughly.
So, I mean, that's...
Get it.
And uranium's half-life is, I think, like 150, 200 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's 10 half-lives. So, yeah, the uranium's really... low in that stuff. You might be wondering, why is the lead that's just sitting there underground not decayed?
Well, it's mixed in with all
other
stuff, which may have more. Right, so it's mixed in with granite. It's probably got a lot more uranium than around it than it would have otherwise been isolated.
Right. Okay. So the half-life is a function of things around it too, right?
Yeah.
Like in a certain radius affects the half-life, right? Because the decay is, you know, just there. If it's proximate to it, it's going to be affected by it. So yeah. I think that sounded somewhat intelligent. Somewhat not intelligent, too.
This is, I mean, when we go on some of these topics that I don't know precisely about, then you don't know precisely about, we get a little bit weird. I mean, I was going to talk a little bit about some science stuff. Like, there's a physics thing, there's a story going around that this guy came up with, or this group of kids came up with a way to do Star Wars or Star Trek style shields, deflector shields.
Okay.
But there's a disadvantage to it, which is that you wouldn't be able to see through them. Their idea is creating a magnetic field and then putting a very dense plasma in that, and if you do that, then that should be opaque to any, you know, energy that's trying to get through it, but that would include light energy
and radar energy. And so you turn that on, you wouldn't know if they're still out there,
right?
And blasting away. You could probably monitor the fluctuations of the energy in the shield, right? At least you would know if you're being attacked or not, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if it...
Because if they're...
Would it cause so much distortion just being there that...
You should be able to monitor fluctuations, right? I mean, geez, holy speculation, right? But you would imagine someone has blasters or... Even bullets, right? You know, when that hits the shield, you're going to be adding energy to the shield, right?
I don't think the concept that was stopping anything that was matter. It was just stopping things that were energy. I don't know whether even a dense plasma field, if you could get something that dense, or it would take so much power in order to stop something that had a lot of kinetic energy and was massive. That would be...
Bring out the slingshots.
Well, So I wanted to get into a little thing about topology, because I saw an interesting question on Ask Science, an interesting answer, where somebody was asking, how can the universe... They said they were getting really confused by the idea of the universe having a shape. Because and it makes sense that someone would be confused by this, because we're all confused by it. But this is sort of the study of topology, right? This is the study of how shapes interact. And the best and clearest thing that I saw and makes the most sense is that think about games that you've played. Like, say, if you've played a Final Fantasy game or if you've played a Civilization game. Have you played any of those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you have a map. It's a 2D map, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go all the way in one direction, you end up in the same space you were again. That is a 2D surface that has a toroidal shape. It's a donut in terms of its shape from a topological standpoint. But it's still flat two dimensions. Well, so it doesn't, so you can have a shape without actually it extending into a three-dimensional world.
Right, but if you're on a 2D plane, it doesn't have to be a torus, right? It can just be a sphere.
Yes, it can be. In those games, it's a toroidal, or a cylinder.
Oh, a cylinder, right? Yeah, because if you can't go across the poles, right. Because it's too cold and you're prehistoric most of the time. Right. The poles should open up in Civ once you get certain technology.
Yeah. In Final Fantasy, it wouldn't be a sphere because the way that you move, it would be a toroid, because if it was a sphere, then if you went in a certain way, the angles would be different.
I get what you're saying. You can't, so I haven't played Final Fantasy, but, this is great, because, imagine if in Civ you could walk across the poles. Mm-hmm.
So you move at the same rate going left to right as you do up and down.
Yeah.
If it was a sphere, that wouldn't be the case in a toroidal
shape. Yeah, it would bring you, if you were on the right side of the screen and walked off the top, you would show up on the right bottom. And there's really not an analog of walking northeast, mm-hmm. right? So I guess that would make it a torus, right? Like a donut, where you would always walk. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it makes it more like a donut, right? Because you can only walk in two directions. You can walk around the outside of the donut, mm-hmm. or you can walk outside to inside. You can't... No, this is a simplification, right? But like in a Civ game, you can't walk diagonally so much, right? There's not a mechanism to visualize walking off the screen diagonally, so...
But the idea is that the present concept of a flat universe would be a 3D toroidal mm-hmm. shape. But that doesn't mean that the universe is enclosed in anything. So the Final Fantasy map is not enclosed in anything. It's not on a 3D surface. It's just a 2D map that topologically is a toroidal shape. So that's the way that you can think of the universe, is a 3D
mm-hmm.
toroidal shape. Or at least as far as we can tell with a flat universe.
Right. Still hurts my head.
It should. This is not things that we evolved to process.
Like trying to map what I understand very clearly of walking around a donut to flying in a spaceship gets very hard.
That's why dropping it down to two dimensions helps.
Yeah. Well, when we were describing gravity and stuff like that, too, it was made it really easy to drop out a dimension and use examples that were dimensionless, right? Where, the bowling ball and a sheet type stuff, right? That kind of analogy is dropping a dimension to help visualize it.
But it also is a little bit incorrect. There's the model
is incorrect. With that visual image, you can add corrections and say, this is intuitive, but this isn't real. But you can see how the steepness of the sheet is
reflective
of the pull of gravity.
It's an analogy.
The steeper the sheet, the stronger the pull of gravity. You got to translate that out.
The only thing you have to clarify is when you're teaching it is that it's an analogy. It's a little bit rough. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly how it works.
Right.
as long as you keep that, then yeah, then it's a great, and then it really is a great analogy. But it's like nothing else; it's not perfect. It's language for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings up the question that I tweeted, which is math invented or discovered?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked before about how it's kind of nutty how some of the constructs of math work. Like when you're doing addition of, you know, two five-digit numbers together, how you can break that up and then add it back together, you know, and just do each column, you know.
Right.
It's like the fact that that works is always like stunned me. It's like even today, it's like it's crazy that you can have a pile of rocks and you can count out the pile of rocks, or you can use these numerical representations, but it's not just representations of the rocks. It's these breaking them into columns. So you have the ones, the tens, the hundreds, the thousands.
But that to me is just a process that we've figured out a way to do, and we figured out an efficient way to do that process.
Yeah, it just seems...
That's not math. That's symbolic notation.
Okay.
So the question is math itself, is the concept of two rocks plus three rocks equals five rocks, is that a discovery or an invention? And, you know, you have to think, well, if you're just talking about rocks...
It's an invention.
It's kind of an invention, right? But
discovering that how...
But then
functions
you
of nature are related to.
Then you start to think about, well, what about zero? That took a lot. That took a while for people to actually accept. And you think about irrational numbers. Mm-hmm. And you think about the square root of negative one. All of a sudden, you're talking about things that are not discoverable in the traditional sense. Things that we really had to work through and do a lot of assumptions to get to something.
Mm-hmm.
And we would never find the square root of negative one in an answer to a problem in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
But if we use it in the correct way, we get correct answers.
Right.
So how do you deal with this question? It's a really interesting philosophical question, not one that we were going to answer on a Crafty Radio free show.
No, those are for the post show.
Yeah. The answer will be on the post show.
Exactly. That's where we discover it. Yeah, that's a great question, whether math was invented or discovered. I think I would... You've definitely put more thought into this than I have. You know, I've only had 2 or 3 minutes here. I would say it was invented, and then the discovery was that you could represent physical...
reality with it.
...phenomena beyond counting things.
Right.
Right? Or you could actually use it to calculate speed and, you know, those kinds of things. Things beyond just quantities.
I mean, it would be great if we...
It's a discovery.
If we could find another species that developed something like math, and to see if we both have a concept like the square root of negative one. If they came up with something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to use that to map the world in a way that we can't imagine. But you get the whole thing of how do we even communicate with
them. Well, there's another philosophical question, right? So, like, things like... I'm just going to throw out an easy one here. But, you know, it's impossible to go faster than the speed of light.
Yes.
What if we had invented a different math that... Could it possibly say otherwise? You know what I'm saying? Just saying, you know, the math that we invented says it's impossible. Maybe even makes it impossible. This is philosophical bullshit, right? But, you know, what if a different math was invented?
You're running up against something that really is... It's the nature of the universe that the speed of light can't be. It's not something that... It's not like the speed of sound or something.
Well, sure, but...
It's really something that is intrinsic to the nature of the universe.
Right, but what if we're blind to a certain element because of the math we've invented? You know? You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. That assumes that math A is invented.
You know, what if the aliens have figured out the square root of negative 1.5, right? And that was the key, and we never saw it as necessary, you know, that kind of thing. I'm just throwing out crazy examples, right?
It's certainly an interesting philosophical question. It's navel gazing, but that's okay. The problem I have with that is that it begs the question about math, because it assumes that it is solely an invention, not a discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it begs that question automatically. And then it begs the question of whether our math is correct about the assumption or not.
Right.
So it's doing two beggings in a row, which is a little bit...
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I wasn't expecting this to have much legs. I thought it was just fun to present question, yeah. Right?
It is fun. I just wanted to counter with the best I could.
Right.
But in the same way that we believe, at least, that language has an influence on your perception, if math is just a language we invented, then there is the possibility you could have an influence on our perception.
Yeah, I mean, that, I like the way you brought that up, because I had just heard... It was a radio lab about placebo. It was pretty fascinating stuff. I don't know if you've heard this one, but you've probably done you've read about placebos and things like that.
And nocebos.
But there's things, you know, like the color of the pill matters.
Yeah.
And blue sleeping pills work better than red sleeping pills in every place, almost every culture, except for Italy. And that's because they think it's because Italy's... And for it's only for Italian...
Because of the pizza sauce.
No, it's Italian males. Italian women, blue sleeping pills work because it's a Virgin Mary thing. For men, blue sleeping pills don't work as well because it's tied with the national soccer team. Because the national soccer team's color is blue. So statistically, blue pills don't work as good for Italian men as for like anyone else for sleeping pills.
Yeah, the placebo effect is nuts. But it shows you something, I think, very important, which is that the complexity of consciousness itself is so out there that we're really kind of just scratching the surface of how all these things interact with each other.
I mean, there's things as simple as pills, and then the one story they had where this guy was, I didn't catch the beginning, I caught it on the radio, not on the podcast, so I didn't catch the beginning of it, but I picked it up mid-story where this guy was setting to, like, debunk witch doctors, and, like, one of the healing tricks they do is they put, like, goose down or duck down in their mouth, right, and they do this thing where they're pretending to suck the disease out of the patient, and they bite their cheek and they mix the blood that's in their mouth with the goose down, and they are pretending to suck and they spit out this bloody downy thing, right? And, you know, it has a very, you know, placebo type, or maybe even better than your average placebo type, because there's some faith involved in it too.
And that makes faith healing.
And faith probably enhances the placebo effect even more. It was very effective. It healed some really sick people. This fake little show, right? I mean, it's so like the guy, I wish I caught the beginning of the story, but it sounded like the guy was setting out to debunk this thing, but he saw that it actually helped people. So he continued, he like propagated it. He became like a healer, like this kind of healer thing, because he thought it was helping people. Don't quote me on that whole part, right? Because I missed part of the story. But I mean, I think that's where it ended up. Like,
I think that the takeaway from that is that bedside manner is important. And how you approach a disease is tied into not just chemicals in your body, but chemicals in your brain too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to work with both of them, and you can't just do that, at least right now. We can't just do that with a pill. So bedside manner is a very important thing. And if for just the placebo effect, and the placebo effect is a very real effect, we can measure it. We can see it in action.
It's hard to make it consistent. That's the problem, right? That's why it's not the, you know, that's why you can't have this treatment, because it's inconsistent results. Some people it's very effective, other people it's not so much.
But you can say that overall,
There's an effect, yeah.
There's an effect.
Mm-hmm. Really fascinating stuff. Yeah. When they started talking about the color of the pills making them more or less effective, it's like, that's nuts, you know. And you know, there's another podcast I was listening to talking about it was about business sense, like negotiation sense type thing, and the native language of the negotiator, and how, like, which cultures and which, or maybe it was whether you're doing it in your native language versus a fluent second language. You know, you're more conservative in your native language, I think. I think that's what it is. It could be the, no, this isn't people who barely speak a second language. This is people who's fluent in a second language. And, you know, if they were negotiating, they do it differently, even though they would consider themselves nearly equally fluent in both. But, you know, one of them is still your native. One's the one you think of in your head when you're not concentrating, right? So all kinds of crazy psychology around just little nuances like that.
We can get on to more, but I think we've had enough time. This one's probably an hour at least. Mm-hmm.
Right? 50 minutes.
Yeah. So let's save some topics. I got a whole list.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So save some for Posha that hopefully we won't be blitzed for.